Renewed competitiveness. Redefined materiality. RE-SG. Plan for this new era at the Morningstar Sustainable Investing Summit on the 18th and 19th of September in Amsterdam. Help shape Europe's competitive edge by applying to attend today.
Welcome to the Net Zero Investor Podcast, where we discuss how investors tackle climate change, the biggest issue of the 21st century. My name is Mona Dola. I'm the editor of Net Zero Investor, and today's podcast is brought to you by Morningstar. Today, we want to take a closer look at this year's AGM season and the changing attitudes of asset owners towards stewardship ahead of Morningstar's Sustainable Investing Summit in Amsterdam on 18 and 19 of September. With me, I've got Lindsay Stewart. Lindsay is Director of Institutional Insights for Morningstar. And also on the asset owner side, we have Leanne Clements, Head of Responsible Investment for the People's Pension, which today celebrates hitting the 35 billion milestone. So congrats on that. Thanks for joining us, Leanne and Lindsay.
Great to be here, Mona. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mona.
Good to have you both. Lindsay, perhaps let's start off with you. I mean, we often come to you and ask you on stewardship insights because that's really your area of expertise at Morningstar. Perhaps you can give us some of the key trends that you've observed during this year's AGM season and the kind of things. Did it go as you expected?
Sure. Happy to share some observations on that. So I spend quite a lot of my time looking at key trends, particularly on the sustainability side of the AGM process, and also particularly in the United States. And we've certainly seen some interesting developments this year. I'll say that the big surprise really came at the beginning of proxy season in February, when the SEC in the United States implemented new guidance governing the shareholder proposal process and the kinds of conversations that large asset managers and large investors could have with companies. And it really sort of cooled down the activity with regard to engagement and stewardship and voting right in the middle of an ongoing proxy cycle, which not everybody was happy about. And that action certainly had an effect through the rest of the season, to the point that now we're analyzing the key trends that we've seen in this year's data. And what we're seeing is a much smaller population of shareholder proposals in particular. That's down quite sharply. However, once you dig through the data, we've also seen indications that that reduction in the size of the population of proposals hasn't necessarily resulted in an improvement in quality, at least in the perception of the market, because we're still seeing over a quarter of shareholder proposals getting less than 5% support, which is a bit of a troubling sign. But we're also seeing a much, much smaller population of well-supported proposals, which we call significant resolutions on the environmental and social side. Now, for the 5 years up until 2024, there have been well over 100 resolutions that got significant support. We're talking over 30% support from independent shareholders. And in the 2025 proxy year, that's fallen sharply to less than 30, 29 at the current count, which means that there just isn't the same core of high quality proposals in the perception of the market that can really signal to companies which kinds of issues and which kinds of disclosures and measures investors are prepared to take a stand on and advocate for. And if you couple that with the fact that engagement discussions have also cooled down and are becoming a lot more ambiguous because of the SEC's decisions around the conversations that can be had safely without having to disclose as an activist, which is quite an onerous process in the United States, you've entered what I describe as an age of ambiguity, where companies are just having to figure out for themselves the kinds of things that investors are still prepared to prioritize, what do they see as material, rather than having that open two-way dialogue that we think is healthy. So a bit of a worrying sign there.
Okay, very interesting. So, but it sounds a bit, a lot more is happening behind the scenes. And perhaps one thing we're seeing also a bit more is asset owners engaging more directly with asset managers on stewardship rather than interviewing specific companies. Is that something you're seeing?
I think asset owners have certainly been highly exercised on their relationships with asset managers for some time now. I don't think it's so much been prompted by the events of this year. But since we saw a decline in asset managers, particularly US asset managers' propensity to support pro-sustainability proposals and engagement, there are a number of sustainability-minded asset owners, particularly those in Europe, but a few also in the US in the public pension fund space, who have been asking more and more questions about asset managers' approach, the kinds of issues they're still prepared to prioritize when it comes to climate, when it comes to labor rights or human rights, amid a drop in the support for proposals around that issue. So it's been an interesting time overall. There have been conferences and conversations between asset owners seeking to find out exactly what asset managers' general approach is, how they intend to respond, what kind of new developments in stewardship practices may help better align the needs of sustainability-focused asset owners with the asset managers that work for them. I don't think we're near the end of the process of getting to final and solid solutions on that, but it's good that those conversations are happening. I think that's certainly going to lead us to a good place in the end.
Interesting. Leanne, just to bring you in here, this is obviously something you've got quite direct experience in with the People's Pension. You invest for segregated mandates now, so you have the power to change individual holdings, but something you mainly tend to do is engage with managers. And we've covered that earlier this year, I think in February, when you made a huge decision to scale back on investments with State Street and selected Amundi and Invesco instead. So, I mean, quite apart from that specific decision, which we've covered in depth already, can you tell us a bit more about the general strategy? So why are you focusing on the managers rather than the holdings?
So really, all asset owners are seeking the same goal, which is to enact positive change in the entities in which they're invested in for better member outcomes, right? There's many ways to achieve that. But for us, as an externally managed asset owner, we believe our most powerful stewardship lever is fund manager selection, appointment, and monitoring. And there's a few ingredients behind that power in our case. First, we are working with managers with a large amount of AUM behind them. So therefore, if you choose to work with such manager who has greater alignment to your responsible investment or stewardship policy, they stand a much greater chance of enacting positive change within the company than we alone can achieve, given the limited exposure we have to any given company. And then second, as an investment team, we believe in working with a small number of fund managers underpinned by strong strategic partnership. What this means is that we have a material amount of AUMs with any given manager versus being more thinly spread across multiple managers. And so that can also help to amplify our influence with them. And then finally, of course, there's the selection and appointment process where I believe you can enact the most influence. And this is why it's so important to embed as much stewardship expectations as you can into the mandate, because this sets the tone at the start of the relationship and can reduce the monitoring burden later on in the process. Now, to be clear, this is not to negate the value of asset owners engaging with individual companies on a case-by-case basis. Like anything in responsible investment, this is not a black and white issue. But getting this prioritization piece right in stewardship, given our collective limited resource in this space, is so fundamentally important. It's one of the reasons why we have it as one of the principles in the asset owner statement on climate stewardship. And we also outline our targeted approach in our responsible investment policy. And we spent a lot of time internally thinking about how to ensure we are getting the best stewardship bang for our buck, to quote a phrase.
I mean, you've already alluded to that a little bit, but so you've got quite long-standing relationships with managers. What are some of the challenges asset owners might face if they are thinking about changing the manager?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. Before I answer the question more directly, perhaps I can make a comment on how the industry reacted to our decision to move managers. It was considered to be quote unquote bold in certain industry quarters. And I think there's a bit of incumbency bias in the industry generally, fear of the unknown. Ultimately, people can be quite change averse. But why is this the case? It's something that we need to think about, I think. What we have found through our journey is that you can often get a significantly better outcome when you survey the market and renegotiate key points. And, you know, I do realize that asset owners need to make their own choices with respect to these things, but it's just merely food for thought for the industry to consider. So to answer the question more directly, what are some of the key challenges? I think one of the main ones is, what do you do if a fund manager in question performs very well on the non-RI side of the scorecard, but poorly on the RI side? You know, what actions you take on the back of that would very much be driven by the RI or stewardship weighting given to that due diligence process or monitoring process, which of course needs to be considered on a case-by-case basis. So for example, in an indexed mandate, one of the key value drivers in our view is stewardship. And so our weighting reflected that in our due diligence process. And so it is possible that defending that decision internally, that sort of material weighting for stewardship, could potentially be challenging. However, if the balanced scorecard comes out as deciding to stay with the manager, right, but you still have these lingering concerns on the responsible investment or stewardship side, there are at least now some solutions in the market that asset owners can consider to mitigate that risk. We obviously have the rise of separate sustainability stewardship propositions, voting choice, etc. Now, I do know there is a polarizing debate about whether this is a positive or negative development. And you can tell what our preference was in terms of our recent decision. But, you know, I'm at least pleased that there is more market choice for asset owners to make a decision that is best suited to their needs. This just simply wasn't the case 5 years ago. And then another sort of angle to consider, which is very much in the industry conversation at the moment, is this whole firm level versus product level alignment, which I think deserves a bit of unpacking because it's quite a nuanced issue. I don't think it's helpful for us to be a silo advocate for firm level alignment without considering other factors. So on the face of it, it may seem like an obvious thing to champion from an RI perspective, but we need to consider what the consequences of that decision might be. Will initially screening out an entire market, for example, from consideration due to firm level issues, will that create other perverse consequences to the portfolio, which could negatively impact upon members? So there needs to be a lot of serious thought and pragmatism around this sort of tension of firm level versus product level is all I would say. And even with respect to product level alignment, there's a lot of things you can do there to strengthen it. So maybe I'll reduce my answer to how you do that with a tagline, which I put in the LinkedIn when we, you know, posted our news of moving managers, which is hashtag put it in the mandate, right? We need to ensure robust, responsible investment and stewardship alongside that, expectations that they're embedded into contractual obligations, because this provides necessary increased protection to ensure fund managers can deliver against their clients' objectives. And this is really critical now during these challenging times. And this will also have a sort of a secondary benefit in empowering the responsible investment teams of fund managers, because they may be also facing their own particular scrutinies in this area at the moment.
Okay, interesting. So just to recap that a little bit and break it down, there's basically three factors you're kind of got to look at when you're selecting a manager. One is kind of alignment with the firm overall, but also the specific project might be very different from firm as such. Like, for example, BlackRock has got very different approaches in infrastructure compared to listed equities. So that might be worth considering. Then what you're highlighting here, Leanne, is obviously how important the mandate is. Lindsay, I just wanted to bring you in here as well. How are you at Morningstar working with investors around these dilemmas?
All of that's super interesting. Leanne's comments certainly play to a lot of the ongoing themes that we've been hearing around the market regarding what kind of stewardship alignment is wanted by asset owners. Some are happy as long as their own mandate specific requirements are being respected. Others are more interested in ensuring that they have an asset manager who at firm level is aligned with those objectives. And so there is a spectrum of opinion around that that's emerging. And as Leanne says, that means the market is emerging for stewardship approaches. I think one thing that is certainly observable is that with high and increasing reliance on passive strategies by a lot of asset owners, where you have a lot of different players, assuming you've got a similar product range in that area, you've got a lot of different players that are offering similar products at similar fee levels. And so the stewardship approach has become a key differentiator there. So at Morningstar, we're very, very interested in digging below the surface, helping asset owners make better informed decisions around that stewardship approach. I've been leading stewardship research at Morningstar for 3 years. And so I've really tried to take a differentiated approach to analyzing engagement and voting practices and policies, and really digging out the kinds of insights that help asset owners like Leanne make decisions on which asset managers are going to make decisions that are better aligned with their own objectives, both on the policy side, but also the implementation side.
Just to pick up one point, Leanne, you made earlier on the product side, you said that the product landscape has evolved a bit over the last 5 years. Are you referring to the rise of proxy voting offering there?
Yes, I am. I'm talking about, you know, State Street, BlackRock, and now Vanguard offering these sort of separate sustainability stewardship propositions. And then slightly prior to that was the sort of voting choice options as well. So yes, that's what I was referring to.
Lindsay, what's your thoughts on this? I mean, has it had an impact on the ability to exercise control over stewardship, you think?
I mean, as the Morningstar representative, I have to say that more choice for investors is always a good thing. The impact of these particular programs has yet to be seen. I think they're still relatively nascent, but I think they have largely been welcomed by those investors that are seeking a choice. However, there are also investors who are questioning exactly what the impact will be of effectively handing more control to proxy voting advisors who administer voting policy choices. And that's a particular concern of those investors, those asset owners who are in pooled mandates, not necessarily segregated mandates, who still want a bit more flexibility and choice and their own hand on the lever for some of these decisions. So I think there's still some way to develop these alternative strategies, but it is good to see them present in the market.
I think I'll add something here, if you don't mind, around this, which is that it's really important from an educational piece perspective that if you think about, for example, the UK pensions market, it's quite fragmented at the moment, which means you have a lot of smaller schemes that are heavily reliant upon their advisors. And I think there really is an onus on those advisors to fully educate trustees and pension schemes around the sort of pros and cons of entertaining these sustainability stewardship propositions so that they can make the best decision for their members.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And when it comes to the pressure some of the funds might be facing from members, say, for example, the LGPS or some DC providers, it's usually centered around individual assets rather than being invested with a particular manager, right? Just a slightly cynical perspective here, but I mean, often these kind of stewardship concerns are flagged by heads of RI, and there's a question, of course, how much investment power do they really have? I mean, do you find that it's become more of a material issue? Or
it would be probably inappropriate for me to make a blanketed statement in answering this question. But here's what I do feel comfortable saying is that as asset owners, I think we need to find a formalized mechanism to support each other to address agency issues. Because, I mean, ultimately, this isn't about policies and scorecards. At the end of the day, this is about people and being agents for change, right? So sharing knowledge with each other and what has worked and not worked in terms of being able to persuade, influence, et cetera, internally is really important. Because I think maybe we spend too much time talking about due diligence questionnaires or scorecards or policies, guidance documents, etc. And I think not enough time talking about underlying behaviors, psychology of how we be a force for change internally. And I think we need more support and guidance in this particular area.
Yeah, that's super interesting to hear from you, Leanne. But I think looking more broadly at the varied institutions that we see in Europe, in the United States, all over the world, I mean, we use the word alignment a lot, but it certainly applies here. It's become really, really important to see alignment within the asset owner between strategic leadership, investment leadership, and responsible investment leadership, really thinking about the purpose and values and mission of the organization. What is the strategy for individual fund strategies and across the entire investment portfolio? So having that kind of alignment and open dialogue and conversation should reduce the amount of friction within the organization when it comes to making tough decisions like reassigning mandates or challenging asset managers on their stewardship approach.
And if you look at the bigger picture, Lindsay, do you think climate and ESG alignment concerns have become more prominent as a factor when selecting managers?
I'd say the conversation in the UK and continental Europe, that issue has come right the way to the fore. For a lot of asset owners, the sharp drop in support for sustainability proposals has been a symptom of a wider issue, which you can fairly describe as an increasing reluctance to kind of be at the tip of the spear when it comes to pushing for sustainability focused changes at companies. And so when asset owners are thinking about who is the best manager to push forward on those issues, there's really been a lot of thought being given to whether US managers are still best placed to do that, given the pressure that they're under from the political and regulatory arena. And given the consistent high support that a lot of European managers have shown in that area, there have been several asset owners who have at least considered it, and certainly at least one who's on this call who's made a move. So it's an interesting space to watch, that's for sure.
I think there's a commercial opportunity here. I've seen a lot of articles recently, which I will definitely be watching with interest, is that will European fund managers, European and UK fund managers, rise up here and really, from a marketing perspective, start to package themselves differently in light of this sort of continental divide that we're experiencing at the moment? That I'm definitely going to be watching with interest. And then what will be the outcome of all that in terms of asset owner decisions around that? I think I agree with Lindsay. It's a little bit too early to tell how that's going to take shape, but I will definitely be watching very closely.
That's an interesting point, because I think we've seen already a bunch of other asset owners, or some of the Dutch pension funds, but also New York City Controller, for example, making similar noises. So there's definitely an investment opportunity. So just to wrap up this whole interesting conversation, I think, Lindsay, what do you reckon this tells us about stewardship going forward?
I think it's important to remember that climate-focused stewardship is still very much top of the agenda for a lot of asset owners out there. And so asset managers, whether they're on this side of the pond or the other or anywhere else in the world, who wish to serve that community are going to have to think very carefully about how they authentically demonstrate leadership in those areas. Otherwise, we'll see that mandates can be moved and could be at risk. So that is one key thing to look at. The regulatory situation in the United States is going to be an important factor. The move that the SEC made in February may not be the last. The new chair is now seated, and there's certainly actions happening at state level governing the framework around corporate governance and investment stewardship. And so it may well happen at SEC level further in 2025 and in 2026. So we're just going to have to keep an eye on what happens there. But referring back to what I said earlier, it looks like there's a bit of an age of ambiguity starting to descend around sustainability and governance and stewardship, where people are less reluctant to say explicitly what they want or what they require. And everyone's going to have to figure out between them an understanding without quite the same level of open two-way dialogue, which is unfortunate and some would say unhelpful, but it seems to be the phase that we're in, and everyone's going to have to rise to that challenge.
Interesting. Any concluding thoughts, Leanne?
Yeah, in terms of these trends, it's so hard to tell, right? On the one hand, we see scaling back on various initiatives, et cetera. And on the other hand, we're seeing market innovations and some early evidence of asset owners rising up. How this will all shake out in the future in the face of significant external challenges, which Lindsay has highlighted, really remains to be seen. But it's obviously one that I'm going to be watching very closely in the future.
Okay, great. Well, I've got a strong feeling we need to repeat that conversation in maybe 5 years' time, perhaps even next year. So if you are interested in discussing this in person, hopefully I'll see some of you at the Morningstar Sustainable Investing Summit on 18 and 19 September in Amsterdam. Also, we have, of course, the Net Zero Investor Annual Conference on the 21st of October here in London. So I hope I'll see some of you there. Thanks for listening.